I'm Cassidy Quinn, and this is Mentally Together. Because whether you can see it on the surface or not, we are all just trying to keep ourselves mentally together. And no matter what our brains are experiencing, we're not alone. We're together. Even though I technically don't actually have any idea how you are doing right now, how your brain is feeling, what you've been experiencing, or what things you've been trying to get your brain to feel a little better. My brain this past week has been feeling kind of sad. It's just one of those waves, especially now that I know that with grief it comes in waves and it feels different day to day, and that is very, very much true for me. I guess these are just some sad days. So this has been a week for me to make sure that I am doing the things that potentially make me feel good. You know, the whole self-care thing. As you can probably tell, because we talk about it all the time on this podcast, I like to try a lot of different things for my mental health. And sometimes I try something and it doesn't work. Okay, nope, next. And other times I find something that is actually super helpful and I want to start working it into my routine. Like right now, the things that I'm trying to do every day, but also not beating myself up when I don't do them every day, because that is a very important part of it, are meditating, journaling, yoga, and getting outside for a walk. Yesterday, I did all four of them. Woo, go me. Today, I did three of them, and tomorrow, who knows? But whatever it is, whatever I accomplish, that is okay. And honestly, this particular group of self-care activities, as you could call them, has felt really good to me for a while. Throughout the pandemic, these are the things that I have gone to keep me feeling centered and balanced, and or at least try to do that. And I go in waves of being more or less consistent with each one. Like, I wrote in my journal yesterday and realized it had been at least a week since I last wrote in my journal. And you know what? That's okay. How many times can I say that's okay in this intro? That's okay. And I know that when I do these various self-care activities, it's not like it guarantees that I'm going to have a good day, I'm going to feel no anxiety, I'm going to be in a great positive mood, I'm going to feel super motivated to get lots of things done in my day, but it at least guarantees that I am taking the time to check in with myself and see how I'm feeling, seeing what's going on in my brain and my body, so then I can figure out what to do with the rest of my day from there. And I like to think of doing these activities as kind of setting my brain up for success as much as possible. And success just meaning being alive and functioning somewhat. But I know there also might come a day when these specific activities no longer serve me. Whether I have a big change in my life or my routine or my mental state or my ADHD brain just gets bored of all of it. Like maybe instead of writing in my journal in the morning, it'll start to feel good to practice some affirmations or write down something I'm grateful for. Or instead of going on walks, it'll feel good to go on runs or just swap that out for taking a nap or taking a dance class or whatever. Maybe you relate to this. Sometimes I have a tendency to think, okay, I found these things that help me, so this is going to work forever. And realistically, that is not always the case. So I try to leave room to keep reevaluating what I'm doing for my mental health so that I can switch it up when I need to and not be hard on myself for needing a change, because it is totally normal. And that's something that my guest today is very open about. It's XRE. XRE is an alt-pop singer, writer, and mental health advocate whose life motto is all about turning pain into power. She does that through her music and by sharing her own struggles with mental health online and in person, speaking at schools and other events. She is so open about everything she experiences, from anxiety to psychosis and what self-care activities help her get through it all. She even launched her own nonprofit called Wisdomania Foundation that offers songwriting for wellness workshops to schools and communities. And for Mental Health Awareness Month, which maybe I should have mentioned this sooner, is right now. It is May. XRE is putting together a whole festival all about mental health called Wisdomania Fest. And it's happening online on May 15th and 16th. If you go, Well, like I said, it's online, so you don't have to go anywhere. You can do it all from the comfort of your home. You can try a huge variety of different self-care activities like journaling, meditating, yoga, art therapy, and songwriting for healing. I'll mention this again at the end of the episode, but if you are already intrigued enough, you want to go buy your ticket, you can go to wisdomaniafest.com and enter the promo code MENTALLYTOGETHER, all one word, for 75% off of your ticket. So, first of all, thank you, XRE, for that. And now, let's let XRE tell you more about her story and everything happening at the festival. So, let's get into it with... She's an artist, an activist, she sings about mental health and aliens, apparently. It's XRE. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You are someone who I think is just really fun to follow on the internet, and I'm sure in real life, but obviously I haven't actually met you. But it just seems like you're enjoying life, you're like creating the things that you want to create, and then throughout it all, acknowledging all the mental health struggles that come along with it. So first of all, thank you.
Thank you. I'd love hearing that because it's exactly how I want to be received. So it's excellent. Good to know there's an alignment. You never know once you know, if your social media persona actually lines up with the way you actually feel, because I feel like there's so much inauthenticity on social media, on the interwebs, that it's hard to like make sure who you actually are is being portrayed in the way that you intend, right?
Yeah. Totally. Well, I'm glad that reflection feels good, but that's what you're trying to put out there.
Yes.
Have you always put it all out there, all of the struggles, or was there a point where you were like, okay, now it's time to open up and share with the internet?
Great question. I definitely did not feel as brave and comfortable in sharing so much until after I recovered from a severe mental health crisis in 2016, 2017 that ended up in hospitalization. I had an episode of depression, PTSD that led into mania, that led into psychosis, and I got diagnosed with bipolar 1. And this was my first time really experiencing a full-fledged psychotic manic episode. And I was like so embarrassed, so full of shame, like humiliated. I thought, my life is over. No one's going to love me. No one's going to work with me. I may as well just like roll over and forget about life. And I was so depressed after, like, I couldn't like get back to life. Like reassimilating out of the hospital was so hard for me to get back into normalcy, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And then in that time of recovery, I realized, wow, like, I don't see anyone talking about psychosis and bipolar as much as we need. And I didn't even know what psychosis was until I went through it. And I was like, okay, I see people talking about anxiety or ADHD or sometimes depression. Mm-hmm. And I think those are maybe the more commonly experienced mental health conditions. And I was like, what about the ones that are very severe and debilitating and hospitalize you? And not that depression can't hospitalize you, right, but you know, experiences like losing total sense of self and delusions and loss of reality to me was the most extreme experience I went through. So like, how do I find other people? Like, I feel so alone right now. And maybe it would be nice to see someone talking about it. And then I realized I had this aha insightful moment of that could be me for other people. Yeah. I could be that person I needed to see. And since I didn't get that, I'm going to do that for other people so they get that. And then I created my self-care tips on my website, which is also on the Wisdomania page. And I started advocating for mental health, making self-care merch and really publicly speaking. Then I started speaking with NAMI at schools and training how to become a public speaker. And then one thing led to another, but really it was like overcoming my own fear and realizing sharing will be so healing for me and helpful in inspiring other people on their healing journey.
Absolutely. So how did that feel when you made that decision? Like, okay, this could be me. Okay. That sounds easy and wonderful as you say it, but I could imagine maybe it was terrifying. Maybe there were some mixed feelings when you made that move.
Yeah, I definitely felt a little cautious. Like it was like, I'll share this much, you know, and like I would give a little and then kind of push myself to give more and give a little and push myself to give more. And in some ways I thought I was like being completely open. And then I remember a friend saying to me, you could be even more open. You could share even deeper and you could go further with this. And I was like, yeah, you're right. What am I? There was like something I was holding on to, a little fear. And then eventually the more and more I shared, the more comfortable I kind of came to the point where I was like, this is me. I'm going to make it as casual as ordering a coffee. Like the ingredients that I want in my coffee. It's as simple as listing the mental health conditions which I've gone through, which are anxiety, OCD, ADHD, bipolar 1, and like I mentioned, PTSD, depression, mania, psychosis. And I've gone through a vast amount of mental health conditions and what is called comorbid or co-occurring disorders. And now I've really shared everything. There's nothing you couldn't Google about me and figure it out. So there's nothing to hide, you know, and I really just like the more I shared, the more confident I got in sharing my story, the more empowered I felt, the more healing I felt by just like putting it all on the table.
That's so awesome. And glad that it has felt good and brought even more confidence and good feelings to it. You mentioned something that I had definitely thought about, that people don't talk as much about psychosis. Like what, for anyone that doesn't know what that means or what that feels like, how do you describe it?
So psychosis is a symptom of bipolar 1 or schizophrenia, and it is a loss of reality where you experience intense paranoia, delusions, and potential hallucinations, which could be auditory, visual, or tactile hallucinations. So for me, I had a lot of paranoia and fear of persecution. Like I thought people were out to kill me. I thought I was being accused of things that I wasn't doing. Like I thought I was like a villain. I thought like I needed to hide. I remember hiding in a building and like, you know, scared people were after me. I also thought like I was in the news and that there was codes about, you know, this very suspicious thinking and like thinking that there's codes and signs, like every billboard I saw was about me. Every TV show was an attack at me. Like everything's very personalized. That's how I experienced it. And like that I'm under scrutiny. Like I thought I'm going to be audited. The taxes are watching me. Like I'm being spied on, like everything like that. So really, really, really heightened paranoia. I didn't have hallucinations, but I have had auditory hallucinations and visual and tactile hallucinations through an experience with sleep paralysis, which is a totally different disorder that I go through. But psychosis can also come about from drugs. So you could take too much acid or molly or hallucinogens like a mushroom and end up in a psychotic episode. But that is not necessarily from an underlying or dormant mental health condition. That could just be brought on by drugs. So there's a difference between drug-induced psychosis and mental illness-induced psychosis.
Wow.
Although they go hand in hand. And abusing drugs could lead to mental illness and psychosis.
Yeah. Thank you for describing all that and sharing so much of what you've experienced in it. And that just sounds absolutely terrifying. So
it
I'm
was
sorry that then, you had to go through all that.
Along with that too, with the loss of reality, it was like, who am I exactly? What is my gender? What is my sexuality? Which bathroom do I use? Am I a girl or a boy? Am I in the neutral bathroom? Like just being completely confused about my sense of identity. At one point I thought I was three people. I didn't know what I identified with. I was completely confused. And it's like a loss of self. Like you're just kind of, and so when that happens, a lot of fear goes on because inside myself, am I ever going to come back to myself again and understand who I am? And everybody in my family wondering, is she going to be the same again? Is she going to come out of this a different person or even know who she is? And so it's a very frightening experience to go through. Luckily, every time I've gone through psychosis three times now, two severe episodes, one more mild. And every time I've come back to myself stronger and even better than before. But what's scary about psychosis is the more times you go through it, the harder it is apparently to get out of it. And people can get stuck in it and get lost in it. So that's why I take medication every day to avoid getting into another psychotic episode, because I don't want to get lost in that and have a hard time recovering.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Yeah, that is a lot to go through. So thank you for putting it all out there, because it can seems hard to understand for anyone that hasn't actually been there in their brain. So talking about it.
Thank you. And what's so sad is a lot of the homeless people we see talking to themselves on the street are probably in psychosis or have schizophrenia or bipolar 1, and they don't have access to medication. So I think my family and access to medication for really saving me, of course, my coping skills and therapy and everything else. But if it wasn't for a support system and meds, I would be on the streets mumbling to myself. And like when I see a homeless person in that situation, I have so much compassion and almost a little guilt that I'm the lucky one, because they're just missing the things that I had and I could have easily been in their situation.
Yeah, that's just crazy to think about. And I can understand where that guilty feeling would come from, but I'm glad that you are
in a good place. Me too. Very grateful. Yeah. All you can do is be grateful. And sometimes I wonder like why there's so much disparity, like why someone's suffering more than someone else and how that's so unfair, but it's just, unfortunately it's part of life and all we can do is be grateful and then contribute to causes that we can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously you've experienced a lot of struggles along the way, but I've seen that your life motto that I see you use a lot is turning pain into power.
Yeah. Which is wonderful.
So what does that mean exactly?
So I didn't invent the saying, but I forget how I came across it or how it came to my mind. I've heard other people use it in the other times as well. And I'm like, hey, I see that. You see that? That's so cool. So to me, it means making your burdens your blessings, making weaknesses your strengths, really just flipping it. Like it's like an internal house flipping in your brain, like just going like, okay, well, I'll just give you an example, you know, like the song I wrote called Don't Die Without Me. It comes out and I don't know when, maybe June or July. I'm just preparing the music video. And this was like, it was inspired by my friend telling me how her grandfather passed away and how her grandmother and grandfather out of 67 years of marriage only spent 3 nights apart. And I thought, wow, she must be so scared and so lonely. And then I remember telling this to my girlfriend, Anya, and I said, like, please don't die without me. And then this came from like fear. Like, I don't want to die alone. I was internalizing their experience. I was scared I'm going to die alone. Like, I just was personalizing it. And when I said, don't die without me, I got up and I realized, oh, that could be a title of something. And then all of a sudden I got inspired. I started writing something. I came home. I wrote a whole song in an hour and a half. It's become one of my favorite songs. So that's an example of taking fear and turning it into something I love, which is songwriting, turning it into a love song about my girlfriend. And so fear into love is a way to pain into power, right? So it's taking a negative and flipping it into a positive and having something that you're maybe proud of at the end that wouldn't have happened without the darkness.
Yeah. That's so cool. And I see you even teach workshops about doing that, right? Like songwriting for healing.
Yeah, it's called Songwriting for Wellness. And we just launched it. It's a 501c3. We got approved, I think, in February. And we already have so many great things going on. We have an event coming up with Save the Music at MTV for Mental Health Action Day. We're working with NAMI. We have events with Free Arts. We're talking to the LA School District to see if we can offer. So we're really like hit the ground running. And what we do is we incorporate reflection, breath work, meditation, songwriting performance, and then more reflection and resources. So it's kind of like a way to empower youth with creative conduits and self-care tools so they can thrive into adulthood and adjust. Because I felt like, you know, my school and most schools are missing that mental health knowledge factor. Like, okay, doing math is great and all, but I find I need more tools for coping more than I need. And I have a calculator for my math, you know,
right.
So
yeah.
Wouldn't it be more practical, you know, to learn about how to cope, you know? And so I'm hoping to teach some practical tools they might be missing in their curriculum.
Yeah. That makes so much sense. We get a calculator and the whole time we're all sitting there like, I'm going to have a calculator. Do I need to know how to add up these numbers? And then in the future, we're like, yeah, could you have also taught me some things about my brain and my body that could have been.
Yeah. Nice. Or like taxes or like how to find a job that's most suited for you, how to be an entrepreneur, like things that aside from healing that are just so like practical and every day you're like, hey, wouldn't it have been nice to know how to change a tire? Like, you know, just things like that. Or like, how do I change my oil? Like just who teaches you that if you don't have a hands-on parent, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And my parents didn't teach me that stuff.
Right. Everybody's like, some parents teach you how to cook a bunch of things. Mine didn't. So, but some people would really know how to cook. And yeah.
Even cooking at school. My girlfriend, Anya, she went to school in Austria. They took cooking. So I thought that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Wow. That's good to know. Yeah. Hopefully she can cook you some good food then.
I'm the better cook, but she tries. And she's good. She's like 85% of the time she gets it.
That's awesome. Sounds like a good match then. That's fun. So I guess this is a good time to talk about Wisdomania Fest, because a lot of the coping skills and the tools that you're talking about teaching to kids in school are probably some of the same things that people can try at Wisdomania Fest, right?
Yes, definitely. So Wisdomania Fest is a virtual mental health and arts festival on May 15th and 16th. We were going to be in person, but then we got scared when Omicron hit and decided like, let's just do it online to be safe. now everything's open and I kind of wish I just was gutsy and went for it, but next year we'll be in person. So we're keeping it online to not have a last minute rush.
And well, we're donating. I think it's fun because I'm like, oh, I can go even though I'm exactly. not in LA where I assume it would have been. And so,
yes. Yeah. There are the drawbacks and the benefits of going online. Benefit is reaching a wider audience. People can tune in all across the US and Canada. If you're on the ET and PT and CT time zones, it fits you. We made it like at reasonable hours. And it's also 16 hours of programming. So I don't expect anyone to be glued to their computer that long. It's more about like going on our website, wisdommaniafest.com, and checking out our schedule tab and going, hey, this class interests me, that class. Maybe there's three things or four things or one thing or five things on there that excites you, and then mark those down in your calendar and just tune in for those experiences. And our invite is enter with an open heart, leave with newfound wisdom. We donate Aww. Partial proceeds to Music Cares, a really big mental health network for anyone in the music industry. And we're using it as a launch, a welcome to our 501c3 Wisdomania Foundation. So to tell you what the schedule is, we have two Zooms going on simultaneously, the mental health and self-care sessions and creative workshops. So for the mental health self-care sessions, we have a guided meditation, intention setting, vocal toning, pain into power journaling with NAMI, stop the stigma with NAMI, liberate experience, which is yoga, dance, and a sound bath, how to tell your mental health story with American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, trauma aware interactions. And then after that, we have a mental health panel. One is on creativity and self-care, the other on community and support systems. And then we ended off on May 15th with a short film screening by Holly Shorts, which will feature queer themes and themes of struggle and prevailing. And the creative workshops are a virtual channel workshop hosted by YouTube, group songwriting sponsored by She Is The Music, visual art therapy with Free Arts, drum circle with Drumming For Your Life, filmmaking 101 with Holly Shorts. And then on May 16th in the evening, we have comedy, live music, and mental health conversations and interviews. Our hosts are a drag queen, Joella Perry, and psychiatrist, Dr. Raghu Appasani. And we have three comedians, five performers, and one DJ. All the comedians and artists are part of the LGBTQ+ community in partnership with programming with Queer Moment. Our goal for this year is just like, let's spread awareness. Let's let people know they're not alone. Let's give people an opportunity to tune in and really focus on their mental health. And let's see which workshops are the most popular, which ones the most people attended to, which ones people were raving about. So that way we can bring those ones in person next year. And hopefully we can do a hybrid version next year where we do some in person, some online stuff. So people can still tune in the next year, or maybe someone experienced it is like, I'm going to come to LA for next year. So the goal is to become the Coachella of wellness. I'm aware yes. you have to start somewhere, and this is our inaugural year. So this is our first. I'm being very delicate and telling my ego not to be too focused on how many people turn up, but be focused on the intention, which is creating a powerful experience for whoever tunes in. And the intention is to help others and do something meaningful. So I'm just trying to remember that and push my ego aside. That's like, but people have to come. I'm like, whoever comes is going to get an amazing experience. And that's what's important.
Totally. Where did the idea for Wisdomania Fest come from?
Oh, it's a funny story. So I knew that I wanted to do something for Mental Health Month in like, this was like April, 2021. I was thinking like, I got to do something. And then I moved, and a mover like misplaced a box of mine, and I thought he stole it. And I like called and I was like, did your partner take my box or did it get lost in the thing? And like, I was just stressed out, you know, how stressful moving could be. And I was like, and then 5 minutes after I called him, I found the box, and I felt so humiliated and embarrassed that I like accused them.
Oh, no.
And the next day, I'm such a guilty person. Like, I feel very guilty easily. Like, even when I make mistakes, I beat myself up and go like, oh, I should have known better. Why didn't I choose kindness? Why did I accuse? And it just always boils down to like fear and stress leads to sometimes not the best reactions. So I was kind of like beating myself up about it. And I realized like I needed to do something really special there. Like, I hurt one person's feelings. Now I need to make up for it by helping as many people as possible. So for Mental Health Month, I was like, I'm going to do something so special to make up for this shitty thing I did. I'm going to do something really empowering, and like, maybe I can make up for hurting one person's feelings by helping hundreds of people. And so I like, it was kind of this like guilt driven, like got to do something really good. And then I started off with brainstorming, like maybe I'll just do some IG lives, do some conversations. And then I realized, you know what? My community and allies are there. It's so big. My network of people I have that are light workers, healers in the mental health space. I was like, I could fill up a whole month of activities. So I decided to do Mental Health Month with XRA, which was a 30-day free event. And 4 or 5 days out of the week, we did an hour to 2 hour session on Zoom with like every single self-care activity and creative activity I could think of. And then so many people signed up, like it was only advertised for 2 weeks and we got like 300 signups. And I thought, hey, well, a lot of people are interested in this and a lot of partnerships are opening up because of this. And so many people want to be involved. This feels like a true alignment of like my purpose. Like I'll always do music. I'll always have music. I'll always have that. But this kind of festival and supporting light workers and bringing the community together is showing to be like my true calling. So I decided, okay, we're going to do something with this. Let's become, and my girlfriend was like, oh, maybe you can become the Coachella of wellness. And I was like, I like that. I'm going to run with that. And then I built a deck. I came up with the name Wisdomania Fest, started reaching out for board members and putting together a team and creating visuals. And then we went live and reached out for, did a lot of outreach for sponsorships and got the whole event covered by sponsorships. And we have so many partners now and it's incredible. And we have so many opportunities to really make a splash in person next year. So that's where it kind of came from, was like me feeling bad that I hurt someone's feelings. And I realized like that's pain into power, right? It's like, okay, I felt pain and then I turned it into something powerful. And now I turned it into a potential, like a mission in my life to like make this festival. And the idea could be like, maybe it doesn't happen in a year, maybe it doesn't happen in 2 years, but maybe in 5 to 10 years, we can have an activation in Toronto, where I'm from, in New York, in Miami, in LA, in Europe, and do a Wisdomania Fest tour. And every weekend of May, Mental Health Month, to go to different cities. So I have a big vision of what this could be. And I'm starting off grassroots. And I'm really excited to see, you know, how it comes together over time.
I love it. Congrats on all of it so far. That's so cool.
Thank you.
It was really fun yesterday when I was coming up with questions for you. I like kept going back in your Instagram and went all the way back to last May. I was like, holy crap, how is she doing all of this? Like this, there's every single day you had so much going on. So it's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a lot of work. It was a little stressful. And I realized after doing the 30 days, I was like, okay, I can't do that again. But what I could do is condense this into a really action-packed weekend, you know, full of self-care and creative activities and entertainment, very intentional programming. And I realized through that 30-day experience, what was kind of exciting and that I wanted to bring back into the 2 days.
Yeah, I love that online on your website, you do share lots of self-care tips and things that have helped you, because that's all we can do. Try them ourselves, figure out if they work, pass them on to others, see if they work for them. But it's also, I always like asking people what has helped them, but also, you know, some people are like, oh, I tried meditating. It made me have a panic attack. Never wanted to do it again. Are there any things that you've tried that, and I do want to get back to meditating because I love meditating and hearing you talk about meditating, but are there ones that you've self-care things you've tried that you're like, nope, wasn't for me, maybe for somebody else?
I'm trying to think, because I feel like I've tried so many things. Like I've tried meditation, intention setting, gratitude writing, therapy, medication, other like things that are positive for your well-being, like active kindness, savoring a moment, socializing. All those things work so great for me, getting in nature. I've done somatic therapy. I've done hypnosis. I've done CBT. I've done like sensory deprivation tanks. I really tried so many different things, and like, I've actually really enjoyed everything I've tried. Like even acupuncture I've done for my mental health. Like I've done yoga, whatever it is, sound bath healing. There hasn't been like one experience where I was like, this was a waste of time. I feel like everything I've tried, I've found value in.
Cool.
And I've never been just Reiki. I love Reiki. Like everything, I'm learning something new about myself. I've even trained in Reiki. I'm not a master, but I have my level one. I can do Reiki on people. Whoa. And I get psychic messages when I do Reiki. It's like how I tap in to my channeling. It's really exciting and fun. So I do that on myself. That's actually how I found out that I could date women, was doing Reiki on myself. I only started dating Anya in 2020. And that was like my first time dating a woman. And now I've been together for over, well, since November 2020. But really everything has some benefit and is worth trying. And I think it's kind of going like, okay, what's my favorite? Like when I tried somatic therapy, I went, this was interesting. I just had a conversation with my body and connected with some stress and kind of worked that out. And the therapist really mirrored me. I felt very validated, but I was like, this isn't a daily practice. This to me is something like maybe once a month. you know, I'd look at meditation. I go, I wish I was more disciplined to do that every day, because I see the everyday benefits. Yoga is something I want to do a couple of days a week. So I think it's kind of more like finding out what's the favorite and picking how the frequency and choosing something reasonable that we can actually adhere to, because there's nothing worse than like making an overly demanding schedule and then disappointing ourselves, you know? So I'd say add one thing at a time, whatever resonates with you, try it out, give it your full attention. And then once you've mastered that, then add on something new. So maybe it's as simple as like, you know, it's even the same with changing your diet. Like you can't go from like, if you ate junk every day and then all of a sudden, no junk, no this, no that, whatever, you're depriving yourself. And then your body's going to go nuts one day and eat everything. So it's like, okay, maybe it goes like to from every day to like 3 days a week, you get a treat. And then eventually you cut down to 2 days and eventually one day and you slowly get there where you're like, oh, I look forward to my one treat of the week rather than, you know, doing it all at once where like you're starving yourself of what you really enjoy. So I think it's the same thing with self-care, like diet and workout routines take like a slow transition and patience with the self, and don't expect immediate change or your whole life to flip upside like in the, for the positive after one day of trying a self-care technique. It needs discipline and practice, and mental health is all about proactive care and maintenance, not just reactive care.
Totally. Yes to all of that. Thank you for saying all that. And I love what you said about add something, try one thing. And then once you master that, once you figure out how that works for you and you've gotten more consistent with it, then start adding another, because I can definitely get in a place where I find something. Oh, I should try that. Okay. I should try that too. And then a week later, you're like, I've been trying to do these five new things every day and now I didn't do them. And now I'm mad at myself. And wasn't the whole reason self-care and to feel better about myself. And now I feel worse because I couldn't sit and do these 10 things that I said I had to do every single day.
Exactly. It can actually have reverse effects and be really demotivating. Like when we try too hard and then fail, sometimes people go, that's it. I'm not good at this. I give up. And then give up completely, rather than the attitude needs to be, okay, I didn't do well this week. How can I improve next week? And not give up on ourselves because we failed 1 week. Like say I say I'm going to do something every day. There's this tendency that when somebody misses a day that they say, forget it. I screwed up. I'm not going to do this anymore. Where instead we should say to ourselves, I forgive you for missing today. I will continue tomorrow. And that way you can actually develop those habits.
Totally. And also, you know, like you could try one type of whatever it is, meditation, yoga, Reiki, go to one person teaching you, and you might not like that exact version of it. And maybe you try another way, and then maybe you don't like that one either. And then five times down the line, you're like, oh, actually, okay, now I found the yoga that works for me, the meditation that works for me, the therapist that works for me.
Exactly.
Definitely sounds trial like, and error too.
Yeah. It sounds like you're referring to like stick-to-itiveness and patience, because like, for example, when I get a new therapist, I audition 5 to 6 and I do little mini sessions, 20 minute sessions or 30 minute sessions with 6 therapists before I narrow in on the one of my choice. Right. So in the same with medication, I've had to try different combinations, different meds, but trial and error through the help of a psychiatrist and doctor to really find the right balance and regimen. So it does take patience, intuitiveness, and trial and error. And just, it is a journey. And you might get lucky. The first therapist you talk to might be the one. The first med you try might be perfect for your body. The first yoga class you go to might be your favorite instructor. You never know, but there's just that awareness of be patient. It will work out, and just stick to it because you will find the right thing. And that's what's so exciting about self-care, is there's so many modalities and there's so many ways to heal, and there's not one route to recovery, which in one way can be intimidating because it's like, what do I do? There's so much. But on another side, it's like, this is amazing. If something doesn't work, I have so many other things at my fingertips, and so many things are online, and so many things you could teach yourself. So it doesn't all have to be about money and exchange. A lot of things you can learn to practice independently, and it's really rewarding and can be empowering if you look at it as endless possibilities.
Yeah. Have you been putting off a visit to the doctor of any kind for way too long? I'm talking a flu shot, an x-ray, or even therapy. I know how that feels. You know you need to do it, but sometimes it just seems so difficult. That's why I've started going to Zoom Care. With locations in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Colorado, Zoom Care offers same-day doctor visits that you can book online or from their app. Yep. you don't have to talk to anyone on the phone. They even offer mental health visits where you can speak to a board-certified mental health provider in person or through video. That's how I've been going to therapy this year, all on my webcam from the comfort of my own couch. Oh, that reminds me, I better go book my next session. If you're ready to make an appointment of your own, head to zoomcare.com. That's ZOOMCARE.com.
Now, back to the show.
I think you also point out another important thing, lots of important things, obviously, that we can be proactive with all of these self-care and mental health tools. And maybe then that helps prevent us from getting to a really bad place instead of waiting till we're in crisis mode and going, oh, maybe now is the time to start meditating and doing yoga and doing all these things because I've lost it, you know?
100%. Like, it's so important. And it's okay. Like, sometimes there's going to be a week, maybe you're on vacation, or maybe you're over your bandwidth at work and you don't have as much time to take care of your mental health. But we all have ups and downs. But it's so important to have a routine, some kind of regimen in place to keep you balanced throughout your day-to-day life so that when you do have a flare up, you already have those techniques in place that you can lean into even more. Like for me, I walk at least 10,000 steps a day. I do yoga 2 to 3 times a week. I meditate here and there. I have therapy. I take medication. I think of my gratitudes. I have meaningful conversations and socialize. I get into nature. Those are a lot of my current coping skills. The old me, not that long ago, did 20 affirmations in the mirror every day. Did my gratitude writing on paper, did my intention setting, journaled for a little bit. And like that worked for me for that time. And then I realized actually what I need right now is more of, I check in with myself. I put my hands on my heart. I go, how am I feeling right now? What's going on? What do I need? And then I kind of bring in light. And then I surround myself with a force field of like positive energy. And then I tell myself I'm in control of my body. So I've been doing that more lately. And then instead, and kind of replace my affirmations and my whole morning routine with a different kind of check-in and energetic kind of healing, you know? And so it just morphs like what I want to do on a regular basis, but I'm always doing something, you know, and I'm allowing myself to go, okay, you know, maybe affirmations work for me for 4 years. And maybe right now I've grown beyond that and they'll always be there for me when I need them again, but I've mastered that and I'm ready for something new. So I think just being flexible, but always being consistent with whatever it is that's working at that time will be so helpful. Like when I went through a manic episode in 2021, I already had all my self-care in place. All I needed to do was increase my medication. I didn't all of a sudden have to come up with this big healing, you know, coping skills that I'm going to all of a sudden do because I'm stressed. I was already doing them. All I had to do is amp up my meds. And then that was the first time I didn't have a psychosis or psychotic episode following the mania because I was able to proactively adjust my medication.
Wow. Wonderful. Great. Just good job at being you, figuring out the things that work for you.
But it wasn't always like this, you know, I wasn't always, you know, in such harmony. I wasn't always doing so well. So it just goes to show like when I might think or someone else might think it's over and that there's no hope left, there actually is. And there's actually so much more to this life than what we're going through in that moment. And there's actually so much meaning and purpose to what we're going through. And we'll see it if we stick around long enough, which I hope I want to see, you know, people to feel empowered and know their life is worth living and choose every day as a blessing. And sometimes it's okay just to like get through today being like, I survived and I did nothing. That's good enough. You made it through a day. Like sometimes that's a celebration in itself. But what I was getting at is just like the dark moments, there could be so much light in the future. So it's just so important to hang on and realize there is hope and things do get better, but it doesn't just happen overnight. It happens with diligence and discipline and practice and hope and patience and community and all the tools that you collect, really amplifying them to your best ability. And so I really believe if it wasn't for my discipline, I wouldn't be where I'm at now. So I'm grateful that in my life, I learned a lot about discipline and I was able to apply that to my mental health and recovery.
Yeah. Which I mean, discipline is a hard thing in general. And then, you know, I can relate to you on the ADHD front. And for me, the ADHD makes it hard for discipline sometimes.
Yeah. And good point. And I was diagnosed with ADHD and I honestly, I wonder if I took a test now, if I'd still have it, because I took Vyvanse for ADHD for several years. And like, it took me to this like new level of focus and self-awareness. And all of a sudden I was like scheduling everything, saying no to things that didn't make sense, saying yes to things that felt in alignment, being able to focus, finally completing projects, like getting to the deadline instead of before the medication, I was focused on so many different things and not like really doing anything to my best ability because I was too like spread out and dispersed to really be successful at anything. And also then I'd feel depressed and down and like lost and bored and whatever. And so I got diagnosed, and then when I got on my Vans, I was like, my life changed all of a sudden. I was writing songs better. I was doing everything better. And then when I realized Vyvanse could be causing my manic episodes, my psychiatrist told me your mania might be being caused by Vyvanse. I had to get off it. And then I was sluggish, not as fully focused, but I realized in the time that I was on Vyvanse, I learned all these tools like setting alarms and scheduling and time management that I was able to apply in my day-to-day life. And it took me a transition getting off the meds, but now I'm like so focused. I have the energy. Like I have all my focus techniques in place that I feel like that I needed the Vyvanse to like have the focus to develop those techniques and then see that I could actually do it. And now that the medication is gone, I'm able to still carry on those new techniques.
Wow.
And, and like, I wonder if I even would be diagnosed anymore, you know?
Yeah. Interesting.
I do have some symptoms, but my time management is there, which is a huge part of ADHD, and my focus is there. So interesting how like a med and a diagnosis can sometimes be temporary. Some of them are a lifetime experience, like bipolar one. I don't expect some magical cure. It's just learning how to cope and maintain. But yeah, like anxiety can be impermanent. It could be a certain time of your life that you're anxious and it doesn't come back. Same with panic attacks, or they could be a lifetime experience. So I wouldn't say to go after a cure, but be hopeful that some mental illnesses will be temporary and others will be longer lasting, but they all are temporary in the sense that like nothing stays the same forever. We always get moments and times of peace, you know, like with OCD, I deal with OCD, but I had a year long episode actually. And now I've been like free of it for a couple of months and it's been so peaceful in my mind. I'm like, thank God. And so it's so important for me to remember next time I go through an episode that, okay, this might last for some time, but I know there's relief coming and it's all temporary.
Yeah. And I've seen you post about how it took you a bunch of years, like 15 years, I think I saw you post about, to actually get to a point where you asked for the help and got the help that you needed when it came to your mental health.
Yes. And the average is it takes people 11 years to get the help they need. So I was a little above average, but it's a scary statistic. Wow. Yeah. So I started experiencing mental health challenges maybe about 8 years old. And at that point, I didn't know, and I didn't know how to ask for help. And then when I did ask for help in high school, when I had severe depression, was having trouble eating, like I wouldn't say it was full-blown anorexia, but I wasn't taking care of my eating habits well. And I was really depressed, is when my parents were going through a severe divorce. And I'd say severe just because it was like very traumatic in the home. And I had abuse in the household and alcoholism, and it was very tumultuous and difficult. And I didn't feel like comfortable going to my school and like talking about it. And I didn't have anywhere to turn. And I went to a therapist. And then when I told them what I was going through, it kind of got to the point of like, maybe they should call child services or whatever. And then my mom was like, maybe we shouldn't do therapy right now kind of thing, because I guess there was fear that the family would be torn apart. So I couldn't get the help that I needed at that time. And I know she didn't mean any harm from it.
Yeah.
It was just a fear of like, well, I want to keep my family. And so maybe they were scared I'd say too much or whatever. So I couldn't get the help I needed. And then I just kind of didn't think of getting it for myself when I was like 18, 19 and old enough to kind of go and get it on my own, because I didn't feel like I was going through something that needed attention. But when I was in my last year of university, I had sleep disorder, got addicted to sleeping pills, went to the doctor with depression, got put on a SSRI, had a psychotic episode because they didn't know I had bipolar underlining, and SSRIs can trigger mania. And that's why you can't treat things like anxiety and depression pills at the same time as bipolar or OCD medication. You can't take it if you have bipolar, which for me, as someone who has comorbid disorders with OCD and bipolar, I can only treat one at a time. And I have to choose bipolar because it's a more debilitating disorder.
Yeah.
So I can't treat OCD with medication. So long story short, I had a psychotic episode and had to file disability in university and drop out of school for a few months. And at that time, that's when I was 23 and I was finally like old enough to get the help I needed. And like someone said, hey, I have a doctor that will help you. And I was able to say yes and not worry about getting anyone in trouble about sharing too much kind of thing. But it's sad to think there must be other kids and teens out there whose families are too scared for them to get help because they know it's a risk that too much could be heard and, you know, the family could be broken up. And that's what I believe went on for me. And that's why I wasn't able to get the help I needed as soon as I needed it.
Yeah. Every time I talk to anyone who has ended up being diagnosed with bipolar disorder, whether it's one or two, it always seems very limited survey of mine, obviously, but it always seems like the initial diagnosis a lot of times does not line up. Like it takes a while for people to end up with the diagnosis of bipolar disorder. And therefore there can be issues getting prescribed the wrong medication, which can be really bad for someone with bipolar disorder. And obviously you are not a doctor, but is there anything like when you look back or for anyone that starts to have any of those feelings, like things people can take note of, like, oh, maybe this is bipolar disorder versus anxiety and depression, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So I'd say, for me, it was hard to know because I was having depression and bipolar one is, mania and depression, but like longer periods of mania and psychosis is a possibility. It doesn't mean you will have it. And bipolar two is depression and elevated moods, but it's not necessarily full-blown mania and it's definitely not psychosis. So bipolar one is like the more severe out of the two. And I didn't know, like, I don't blame my doctor for just thinking it was depression because I wasn't presenting any elevated mood or any manic episodes. So how would she have known? Like, I really just think it's a matter of experiences that made it very crystal clear. Like once I was in a full blown manic episode and having psychosis and they knew I just had a depression before that. So obvious classically a bipolar one case. But when I came to my doctor depressed, there was no evidence that it could have been bipolar. So she made an honest mistake and I don't blame her for it. And I was just going through depression, but years and years and years of on and off depression that could be. So when someone goes through years and years of on and off depression, it could be depression only. It could be bipolar. And we don't know it's bipolar until there's some kind of elevated manic kind of mood involved.
Yeah.
And that hadn't happened to me yet before I got on the SSRI.
Wow. Thank you. Thanks for sharing all that. I've even seen you post about sometimes you're in a manic episode and that's when you've created this music video or written this song. So how does it all fit in with your creative life and career?
Yes. So mania is definitely could be a superpower. It can also be very stressful. It depends on how I manage it. But with the help of, like, for example, the first ever productive mania I had was in March 2021. I had a full-blown manic episode. It lasted from February, like, 14th to like March, mid-March. It was like a month long manic episode. It was like, when is this going to end? It was exhausting. I could barely sleep, barely eat. I was exercising profusely to like get my energy out. I'd be in a writing session and I'd be like doing a cartwheel in the room and be like, I just need to get my energy out. Like I literally, but I was like a human version of an animaniac because I wasn't like in psychosis. So I was in this very fun place of mania, which like people like being around that energy. It's hyper, it's fun, but it could be exhausting, you know, for myself. Like I couldn't stop moving or doing. So when I was so intense, I just like intensely focused on songwriting and planning music videos and photo shoots and video. And I just like, was like, I'm going to take this energy and I'm just going to use it to the max and be hyper productive and exercise and get super fit and just like use this energy to the max. Because it's a rare occurrence that I had it in such a, like, it's like a, because the medication, it was like, I was not over the edge.
Yeah.
So I just like really used every hour of the day that I was awake to do something productive and channel my energy because I painted the power. If I'm going to be in an episode, I may as well get something out of it. And then I like shot a whole music video, had so much energy for it. But really, if it wasn't for my organizational skills and meds, I wouldn't have been able to be productive.
Yeah.
But because I can focus and put my and stick to a schedule and set alarms and switch activities, I was able to channel that extra energy into something useful.
Wow. That's really cool, but also makes a lot of sense. Like, you have to have the systems in place and the meds. It's not like, oh yeah, it's great. You just go into mania and you get stuff done for a month and that's how
no,
it goes.
It needs to be like, or like, yes, exactly. The organization and the medication. Like, if I didn't have the meds and I didn't have organization, I would have eventually had to be hospitalized.
Yeah. Wow. Oh yeah. I did want to ask you about meditation, because whenever we talk, anyone talks about meditation, there's so many different ways to do it. So for you, what does that mean? How do you use it in your life?
So interesting, because there are, the more I meditate, the more I realize so many things are meditation, like meditation and mindfulness really overlap. So
yeah,
even you can even say cooking could be a meditation, you know, mm-hmm. when you're focused on one thing at a time in a certain way. But I'd say traditionally meditation for me is more like putting on a guided meditation, like Tara Brach, for example. I love her mm-hmm. meditation. So I just go to the podcast, I pick like, oh, there's one on increasing compassion or connecting with happiness, or, you know, tuning into my awareness, whatever I'm in the mood for. And I usually will meditate for like 25 minutes when I'm in that zone. And then there's other times where I do like that check-in, like I just told you, where I close my eyes and I tune in and I'm bringing in light and I'm creating a force field. That is a form of meditation too. That's visualizing and with my eyes closed and laid down or in a comfortable position. That's a more shorter self check-in / meditation. And sometimes my therapist will guide me through meditation and hypnosis kind of meditation. So there's all kinds that I do. And there's even on my website, I have a ton of different ones. There's like the 5-minute positivity meditation. So all you need is 5 minutes, you know, at the end of the day to do it. And then there's tons of techniques, but I'd say start with 5 minutes and mm-hmm. then amp it up from there. And a big thing that I learned about meditation through talking to other teachers of meditation and people who actively practice meditation is that no one is expected to be like a Buddhist monk who all of a sudden like all their thoughts are clear and they're in this like happy place and they're sitting on the top of Mount Everest and all they see is clear sky. Like, that is like this depiction that doesn't exist. Meditation is actually actively pushing away thoughts. Meditation isn't the absence of thoughts. Meditation is trying to sit in silence, trying to clear the mind. And every time a thought comes in, going, thank you, but no thank you right now. Thank you, but no thank you right now. Over and over and over and over again. So it's not the absence of thoughts, and you're not failing if you're getting thoughts. There's no such thing as failing. It's just practicing saying goodbye to thoughts. I talk to you later, you know, and also maybe noting what are the thoughts that keep coming up and reflecting on that later. Because maybe there is a reason that they're coming all of a sudden. You have time to reflect and these thoughts are coming in and inundating you. Maybe they do need some focus, not in the meditation, but outside in a journaling or therapy session.
Yeah, totally. I know a lot of people, I used to think a couple of years ago, I was like, I could never meditate. I'm too ADHD. Like, I can't even sit still for 5 minutes. How am I going to sit in silence and have no thoughts? What the heck? But yes. So the way you put it is perfect. You don't have to just think nothing.
Yeah, it's impossible.
You're a human. Your brain's going to get distracted. The point is then coming back. Okay.
Exactly. It's the
starting
process
over.
Of coming back. Yeah. Exactly. It's the process of coming back. And that's how I think meditation should be marketed, as like what we just said, the process of coming back, you know, because then so many people who have the misconception that it's an absence of thought will be less intimidated.
Yeah, exactly. And try it. And figure out a way that to make it work for them, whichever type of meditation they want, instead of just going, no, I absolutely couldn't do that because it sounds impossible. Because it does, if you put it that way.
Totally. I find actually integrating affirmations or just mantras in a meditation could be a really good way to stay in tune. So for example, one technique I learned is when you inhale to say let, and when you exhale to say go in your mind. So the whole time you're just saying let go, let go, let go. And then there's no room for the thought to come in because I'm saying another thought.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's also a technique, is using something powerful like a mantra or an affirmation.
Yeah. You were talking about meditating where you sit and you're doing a check-in and bringing light in. Is that, I've seen you post about white light meditation. Is that that, or is that a different thing?
Yes. White light meditation is any form of bringing in light. So it could be as simple as sitting down in a cross-legged position or lying down. I like to put my hands on my heart. Some people like to put their hands on their legs, for example, or knees, which means that you're grounding. And some people like to put their hands up, which means you're receiving. So it depends if you want to get knowledge, receive or receive healing, or you want to ground, or you want to connect with self, or you want to connect with breath, which would be like one hand on the belly. So there's lots of ways to like get in a position. And then for me, white light meditations, either listening to a guided white light meditation or just imagining light coming through my chakras and just kind of going to my crown chakra and going to my third eye and just kind of coming down and kind of like a cleanse, like imagining white light cleansing my soul, my body, and like imagining it going through my arms, my legs, my fingers. And then I say things to myself in my head, like, I am light, like I ingest light, I digest light, I eject light. And like, just like, I am a circuit of light. Like I inhale, I exhale light, I transform light, I am light. And just like telling myself these positive affirmations of how I'm recycling like a cyclical process of light within me and taking it in and giving it out to others and how that is who I am, and really integrating those affirmations as I'm imagining the visuals of light kind of washing through me.
Wow. Cool. I've never tried that, but now I want to, for sure.
Yeah. You just have to use your imagination. And if you want to add those affirmations of I am light or light, you know, I feel light go through me, light is cleansing me, you know, I embody light, I receive and give light, you know, things like that.
Okay. Another curiosity, you mentioned a while ago doing Reiki and having psychic messages. I've never tried Reiki, but how does this work? What's going on?
Okay. So Reiki is energy healing, and it's really just tapping into the body's energy to move it around and release traumas and pain. So I'm not a level 3 master, but I did in my first level that I took, found out in very quickly that I get psychic messages. And I've had psychic friends and psychics tell me that I do have psychic abilities. I wouldn't say to people I'm a psychic medium because I've not developed and harnessed those into the full potential. Like I've not just done that work. I'd say that Reiki is like a series of hand, like first you wash your hands and you say a prayer, and then you do series of hand positions over body in a certain order. And while I'm doing that, I get messages. So I'll be doing Reiki on people and I'll hear like, they're dehydrated, they need more water, or they need more greens in their diet, or they're comparing themselves to others, or they're going to have this many children, or this year, this is going to happen. And like just different things at different parts of their body. And I write it down. And then I ask, like, do you want your messages? And some of them, all of them say yes, but I've talked to some people and they're like, I don't want to know, I just want Reiki, you know? So it's been really interesting. Yeah. And so many of the messages that have come to me have been so clear with people that they're like, I was on the phone talking exactly about that challenge I'm going through an hour ago, or how did you know I hurt my knee? Like just things like that. So it's been, and so I did it on myself and I was like, okay, well, I've never done it on myself. Let's give it a go. And the message I got was, you're not ready for true love until you go through a certain experience. So I asked, okay, what's that certain experience? Didn't get an answer. So it felt like it was open-ended and I needed to like marinate on that a little. And then I was just having like different conversations with friends and one thing led to another. And I had this revelation that was like, I think that experience is dating women. And like, I couldn't tell you exactly what made me pinpoint it at that, because I wasn't like a closeted gay. Like I wasn't like hiding it and suppressing anything. I wasn't like, I literally never entertained it in my life other than like kissing girls for fun in high school to like at a party, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I never like thought of it seriously. I just thought that's something you do when you're a teenager for fun, you know? And I never in my life imagined being with a woman. I just didn't know that that was available to me really. And I just like was like, well, I need to trust my inner voice, because my inner voice, like God, call it the universe, call it your spirit guides, call it source energy, whatever it is sending me a direct message. And I believe in listening to messages that are given to me. Every time I've suppressed a message, I was wrong and I should have listened to it. So I decided I'm going to go all in on this. So I changed my dating apps to interested in women. I like went all out and like met a ton of people online, and then I narrowed it down and I met 3 different girls in 1 week.
Oh my gosh.
In the first 2 dates,
I was like, when it rains, it pours.
Yeah. I was like, this feels like a friend. Like, this doesn't feel like, I feel like I'm out for dinner with a new friend. Like, this doesn't feel romantic. Second date, the same feeling. And I was like, what am I doing? Like, I'm listening to my inner guides. You're telling me something, but like, what is it? It feels like friends. I don't know what this is. And then on my way to my third date in the Uber, I was like, okay, if this, there isn't a click here, I'm just going to sit back. It doesn't mean I give up on dating, but I'm not going to be so actively, intensely dating and focused. I'm just going to like relax, you know? And then lo and behold, that's when Anya walks up and I'm like, ooh, I'm attracted. I'm interested. And we've been dating ever since. And
that's so cute.
We have plans to move in together very soon. We're going on a big Euro trip and it's very exciting. She has life partner material and it's just so interesting.
You've made a whole album about her, you know,
Big deal. Totally. We have our artwork on the wall. I'm at her place right now and we have the artwork, Xori and Anya on the wall. And it's just a really eye-opening experience. And it goes to show how important it is to listen to our inner voice and to listen to our spirit guides or whatever each person connects to, whether it's universe, God, your dog, whatever it is, you know, that you praise. But I like to think of it as the universe and my spirit guides kind of connecting with me and telling me, guiding me along the way.
Yeah. Which, I mean, for me, like listening to my intuition is definitely something that I want to feel good at, but am definitely still working on, because there's always just so much going on in the world. You're like, what is an actual thought? What's a real feeling? What is... And with anxiety, it's like, oh, feelings are not facts, whatever. What do I listen to? And I would imagine if you've experienced psychosis, and you talked a while ago about how in some of your periods of psychosis, you're like, who am I? What gender am I? What am I sexually attracted to? You have all those questions of your identity, but then you're at a point where you're feeling better. And those are still the questions that come up through a message from the universe, which is just kind of fascinating and also sounds very confusing.
And a really interesting point there is like, how do you trust your intuition?
Yeah.
Especially for me and for everybody, but for me, I can relate to that in the sense of like, I believe people were after me. I believed everything was a sign. I believed all these false realities that were not real.
Yeah.
So how do I go back into trusting my own messages for my spirit guides? How do I trust what's real? And I have missed certain opportunities because I denied things out of fear. You know, so I just realize when I'm in a moment of tuning in and I get a message that is real and to trust it and to never deny myself because of past experiences of false realities that I deserve to trust my intuition. I deserve to trust my instinct. And there's a fine line between psychosis and being psychic and getting messages versus getting nonsense. Right.
Yeah.
So I think just trusting that when I am in a healthy state, I am in tune with my body and mind and spirit guides and universe, and I am getting guided in the right way. And that when I'm in psychosis, to not necessarily trust those things and to know the difference. So mm-hmm. I think that there's a fine line there. Like intelligence and insanity is a fine line to dabble on. Like a lot of the most creative people have a mental illness, for example, right? And maybe they wouldn't be as creative and as prolific and as interesting in their art if it wasn't for that side of them, right? So it's a fine line to walk. But I think at the end of the day, I choose to trust my gut and whatever it tells me, I will follow unless it harms myself or someone else.
Yeah, that's a great way to define it. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Of course. Yeah, and I hope you learn to trust your intuition over time because it's very empowering.
Totally. I feel like I'm getting better at it, but it's difficult.
Yes.
Some days, some weeks I feel better at it. Some weeks I'm like, what am I doing?
May I suggest something?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe when you get an intuition, to write it down and then kind of journal on, if I follow this, what do I imagine will happen? If I don't follow this, what do I imagine what will happen? And then let time pass and go back and go, did I follow this and what happened?
Mm-hmm. Or did I not follow it? And do I wish I had followed it? Because
exactly.
I wish because that had happened, but instead this happened. Yeah.
Exactly. So almost like you monitor what the outcome of following or not following intuition does for you. And then once you do that enough times, you might actually learn that your gut is worth trusting.
Ooh. Yeah. You should just, you said you do some self-care merch. Just your gut is worth trusting. Just there. That's a good, that's a good line. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Are you a coffee drinker or more of a tea person? And what do you like to mix into your caffeinated beverage of choice? Personally, this past year, I've gotten really into oat milk. At one point in the pandemic, I was even making my own, but that didn't really last very long. It did require some effort. And honestly, some mornings, even just making coffee seems like a lot of effort. And that's where Rise Brewing Company comes in. They make nitro cold brew coffee and sell it in cans by itself or mixed as an oat milk latte, an oat milk mocha, and they do tea too, like an oat milk London Fog. Or you can just buy their oat milk by itself. Have I said oat milk enough times in the last minute? The point is, Rise provides energy for good people to do good things, and I think their coffee is really good. And their oat milk, obviously. To get some Rise for yourself, click the link in the show notes. It lets Rise know we sent you and helps support our show. Now we have a few questions from our friends on the internet.
Oh, the interwebs.
Yes, we love the interwebs. Alize says she is an actor and a musician. So she says, how do you balance the discipline of writing music with ADHD?
I'm thinking the best thing is to really take the moments you feel inspired. So when you feel like you have an idea, drop whatever you're doing if you have the capacity and get to it, because we are most motivated when we are inspired, right? So I'd say take that moment. And if you don't have the moment, you know, put it in your phone, get back to it later. But A, work when inspired. B, opposite of that, don't work when you're inspired. Set up an hour where you say to yourself, this hour I'm going to write and I'm going to focus whether or not I'm inspired. And if you need to, set a timer every 15 minutes where you jump up and do some jumping jacks or somersaults or run around the block, whatever it is, treat yourself, or 5 minutes of TV, whatever it is, treat or a snack, you know, like you, I think what's really helpful is like treats. And I don't mean them literally like food, but I mean like just rewards.
Exactly.
So maybe you give yourself an hour and you go, in this hour, I'm going to use 45 minutes and I'm going to take a break for 5 minutes every 15 minutes and I'm going to reward myself. So to give yourself this kind of like technique of I'm being productive, but I'm also taking little rewards. And then for the ADHD kind of brain, that helps you, because if you're, you know, feeling like you're distracted, you could use those 5 minutes to do whatever is distracting you. You know, maybe you got six text messages and you're thinking about those text messages and take that 5 minutes to answer those messages. Mm-hmm. So I think kind of in carving out time, utilizing your inspiration moments, giving yourself rewards.
Yeah, that's great advice. Rewards are definitely very helpful for me in my ADHD and trying to focus, not writing songs, but just in getting other stuff done. And definitely when it comes to creative stuff, because it's hard to balance it all. Lisa, this is one we talked a little bit about, but Lisa says, question from a fellow musician and bipolar, is songwriting healing for you?
Most definitely. I think songwriting is one of the most healing things for me. Like, I love songs because it's like your way to birth like a musical baby, like that didn't exist before. And like, it only comes from you and your collaborator, or just you, whoever it, sometimes I work on songs myself, sometimes with other people, but songwriting is so healing. And that's why I do the songwriting for wellness workshops. And I feel like any form of creativity is healing if you do it in a way that makes you feel empowered, you know? And so like what I find healing is taking a dark situation, finding the light and writing about it, or and making it something positive, like seeing what I went through and how I overcame it and writing about that. But then I also find it healing to go real raw and honest and not necessarily talk about the light, get into the crap of it and go like, this is all crap right now, and kind of get out the darkness, but find some place in there to put a little bit of hope, you know? So being real and balancing hope with the realness of the story is like the key to what makes me feel better after. Because when I just focus on the negative, I never feel great after. It's about the transformative energy. It's about transmutation, how to take the dark and turn it into light and walk away feeling proud that, hey, I made this because of a challenge. If it wasn't for my challenge, I wouldn't have this song. And if it wasn't for my challenges, I wouldn't have the life that I have. Right. So, I think it's very healing. And I'm sure you feel healing from songwriting too, Lisa. Otherwise, you probably wouldn't do it. Right. So definitely.
Absolutely. Which is so cool that now you are passing on that gift to other people. And hopefully they get to find some healing in the songs that they write in your workshops too.
Yes.
Along that same line, Ryan says, have you ever produced a song that evoked past trauma or spoke to something uncomfortable for you?
Most definitely. I never released it, but I wrote a song about intrusive thoughts. And I was really like I said to you earlier, the more I talked about mental health, the more brave I got about sharing more and sharing more. So the one that has been hardest, like for some reason, you'd think maybe psychosis would be the most uncomfortable one to talk about, but really the most uncomfortable for me is OCD, because there are totally different subsets to OCD. So there's anxiety about like cleanliness and paranoia of like concern, did I leave the oven on, or certain things like that. And there's some about like sexual identity or sin, being sinful. There's all types of subsets, and the subset that I go through I find really stigmatizing. It's called harm OCD. And it's when you're scared of harming yourself or harming other people unintentionally. And it's like fears of thoughts of violence. And I'm like, not violent at all. I don't care to hurt anybody. I don't want to hurt myself. But having those thoughts of like being a violent person can be so scary. And I felt like scared to share about it because I didn't want people to think I'm like some underneath it all, some like psycho killer for having these thoughts, which I'm not.
Yeah.
The reason the thoughts scare me is because they're not me, because there's something I'm so would never want to be. That's why I'm so scared. If I was somebody who wanted to kill somebody, those thoughts would be enjoyable to me. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, so opening up about that with a collaborator and writing a song about that, which didn't get released, the lyrics or something about like, it's okay to be a little crazy. We're all a little zany in our own way. I forget all the lyrics, but it was just like about how we all have intrusive thoughts and we all have thoughts we don't want to have. And like thinking about, I'm going to drive off a cliff right now, or I'm going to accidentally hit somebody, or whatever the violent intrusive thought is. We've all gone through it. Mm. And just kind of making it more common to talk about intrusive thoughts.
Yeah.
And that has been it's fear of judgment. Sharing about it, I get scared people are going to think I'm a violent person when I'm not. But the more I realize that I'm not, and that's why it scares me, that I feel more okay to talk about it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like a beautiful song.
Thank you. I don't know if it'll get released, but it was fun to write it.
Yeah, totally. At least if it was healing for you to write it, then it did its job.
Yes.
And last but not least, we have a speed round of questions. The quick round. I always say though, you can answer the questions as quickly or as fully as you would like.
Can I answer them in sounds like meh?
Totally.
Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yeah.
When was the last time you cried?
I cried. My sister was going through, and this was maybe 2 months ago or 1 month ago. My sister was going through a severe mental health crisis, and I was like very overwhelmed with that. And then someone sent me a text that upset me, and like the text made me cry. Aww. But I realized it was just like my sister that made me cry. But like the text sent me on, I cried in the shower, and I was like, so that was the last time I cried. It's just someone saying something insensitive while I was in a vulnerable state.
Yeah. You even cried for like a month or two?
Yeah. Well, I've cried for nothing.
That's yeah. Well, the next question is, when's the last time the opposite? You had a big belly laugh. Something just made you laugh.
I think what made me laugh really hard recently, my girlfriend and I were in the gym, and this guy was like working out with his earphones on and going like,
oh goodness,
like, making the most intense sounds, and I couldn't stop laughing at him.
He probably couldn't hear you laughing if he couldn't hear the sounds he was making. So. Oh my gosh. What is your favorite song to perform for people?
Ooh, I think She Knows It, my last CP, Ani. I love it because I'll whip my hair around a little bit. And then the next day I'm like, oh, I need a chiropractor. Why did I do that?
Oh no, I did this to myself. Dang it. Yeah. What are you grateful for right now?
I'd say really everything is such a hard question. I have such a beautiful life right now. I'm healthy. I feel very mentally stable. I'd say like I'm grateful for my health and for the lifestyle I've built for myself, and I'm excited for the upcoming travels my girlfriend and I have planned for Europe.
Oh, fun. Awesome. What sound can calm you down or bring you joy when you hear it?
Ooh, singing bowls, you know, like from sound baths.
Yeah.
Any singing bowl or like meditation music. Last night in bed, I mean, like my girlfriend was like playing some like beats or whatever. I was like, come on, meditation music, please. And then like, it just like soothes me, like just like calming, just relaxing zen sounds.
I love that for, I just search like meditation music on YouTube or Spotify for the background while I'm working on things.
And yeah, I agree. And you know, to work to binaural beats, that's also really helpful. It gets your brain in like a working mode. Binaural beats. You can YouTube it. It's like a certain rhythm or frequency that gets you in the zone.
Cool. What is the best thing you do for your mental health?
Oh, this is so tough. Adhering strictly to my medication, like not fiddling with it. But I think a lot of times, some people, I should say, will, and I've felt the same way myself, will say, I feel great right now. Everything's good right now. I should get off my meds. And it's actually like, maybe it's because of the meds.
Yeah.
So I think adhering strictly to my medication and self-care routine. And like, that's a variety of things.
Mm-hmm. What about the worst thing that you're like, I kind of want to stop, should maybe stop doing that, but it's not that bad.
I've stopped it, but I get temptations here and there, drugs. So I feel like drugs are really tempting to party, or I'm not a big partier, but to like do a drug or whatever, like edibles or smoke weed, or I don't, haven't done Molly or whatever in years, but like that has been tempting in the past. And for now, it's just like sticking to quitting weed. Like I'm sober. I just have like a glass of wine once in a while. And lately I've been like, oh, maybe I'll do an edible every other month, like just at a fun. And every time, usually I regret it. And it just like, it's not good for my mental health. Like THC just makes me paranoid a little bit, makes me anxious, flares up my OCD, intrusive thoughts. So I just like, I feel like I miss it. And then I realize it's not good for me.
Yeah, that's fair. What is your favorite thing about your brain?
In one way, it's like my intrusive weird thoughts are like the most annoying thing, but sometimes I have like the funniest thoughts and like that come in my mind, and I love like just the silly things I think of. And I love like wordplay and like when I come up with silly word combinations and visuals that are just entertaining to me. And
yeah,
I think I have an interesting brain like that.
What is your biggest guilty pleasure?
Frozen yogurt.
Ooh.
If I could eat it every day, oof. I wish I could have a frozen yogurt machine in my house.
When do you feel most yourself?
In any creative setting, I definitely feel the most myself. When I'm with like friends or my girlfriend, like when people would just get me or whatever. But I'd say I feel my best when laughing.
Ooh. If you wrote a biography, what would it be called?
The Journey to Pain into Power with Eckhart.
Yes. I like it. I have a feeling that's probably going to happen, so I'll be ready. What is something you're really good at that people might not know?
Figure skating.
Oh, I was like, I feel like she's probably puts most of it out on the internet, so it might be a tough question. No, she had it ready. Awesome. When you say really good, like, are you spinning around and jumping and doing?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What?
I was training for the Olympics. I was learning my triple jumps before I quit. Now I can't even land a double, but I can still land my axel and do all the spins. Majority of the spins, shouldn't say all, because I can't do the Bielman where you pull your leg over your head anymore. I'll break my back, but I can do a lot of the other spins.
That's so cool. Wow. What a great answer. Oh my gosh. I had no idea. And also I'm jealous. And the last one is, if you had to get something tattooed on your forehead, like we're in this weird future world that I've created for some stupid reason where everyone's getting a forehead tattoo and it's like your message to the world on Zoom, out walking on the streets, but also when you look in the mirror, it's your message to yourself. So what would your forehead tattoo say?
I guess if I had to, I'd say a love.
Ooh, yeah. Nice and simple and sweet. Perfect. Can't wait to see that. It'll look great in all your music videos. you could just get the Wisdomania Fest logo.
Wisdomania logo.
And then, of course, where can people find you? Where can they get tickets to Wisdomania Fest, which is coming up May 15th and 16th, right?
Yes, that's right. You can tune in from anywhere. It's virtual. You can use a discount code MENTALLYTOGETHER.
Yeah.
So that you can go to wisdomaniafest.com. It's 1M. So WISDOMANIA Best. FEST.com and tune in with us online. You can find us on Instagram. We need some followers. We still are building our following. So yeah. Wisdomania Fest is for the festival and the foundation. And to find me, XRE, XARI official on Instagram and all platforms. And my website is XREofficial.com. And on my website and on Wisdomania Fest, you can find a number of self-care tips and mental health resources, such as all the hotlines, everything that I could possibly think of for self-care. So if you're looking for something and want something to check out, go to the website. And whether you get a ticket or not, I hope it benefits you in some way to check it out.
Cool. Well, it seems like such a cool thing and it makes so much sense. I love that you are doing it because for a million reasons, but I've gone to plenty of music festivals and sometimes they seem great for mental health. Sometimes they seem not great for mental health. So why not make it for mental health, but also fun and educational and just try all these things sound like things. Oh yeah, I should try that. I should try that. I should try that. But you're just saying, okay, let's try them all in this one, these 2 days. And
see what you see like. And hopefully there's a couple of takeaways in your, and some, I'm hoping people are like, wow, I didn't realize that was so helpful for me. Or, oh, I didn't like that, but I liked this one. Or that reminded me of something I've tried before and I forgot about. So, you know, it's like just thinking about what excites you most and how you can carry it with you to benefit your life and day to day.
Absolutely. I love it. I'm excited for it. Thanks for talking to me and being so open about all of it.
Thank you. And thanks everybody for tuning in.
And thank you, wonderful human, for listening to this episode of Mentally Together. I, Cassidy Quinn, will see you next week. In the meantime, go do something nice for your brain today. Like try a new self-care activity, like some Reiki, or practice some affirmations. Try writing a song to let out some of your feelings, or buy a ticket to Wisdomania Fest. Whatever will make your day just a little bit better. And remember, if you do want to get that ticket to Wisdomania Fest, you can get 75% off if you enter the promo code MENTALLYTOGETHER, all one word. And you can do that at wisdomaniafest.com. Again, promo code MENTALLYTOGETHER. Because remember, we are all just trying to keep ourselves mentally together. Together is produced, hosted, and edited by Cassidy Quinn in collaboration with Koba FM, a podcast network that is all about community, baby.